dangerous. It undermines local control, and it threatens the development of infrastructure, and it is absolutely not a taxpayer protection measure. And I can get into that if you want.
Yes, please. Please do.
Well, revenue bonds are is debt that government issues when you have a project that creates revenue to pay off the debt. So, toll bridges were built with revenue bonds because you've got tolls to pay them off. Water projects are usually built with revenue bonds because you pay water rates at home or in a business, and that pays off the bonds. Airports are built with revenue bonds. The landing fees and the concessions pay them off. So if these bonds go south, if you build a project and somehow the revenues can't pay the debt, if they go south, it's not the taxpayers that are left holding the bag. It's the bondholders. The taxpayers are not implicated at all when it comes to revenue bonds. Now, for general obligation bonds like school construction, there's a school bond on the ballot you probably already talked
about.
We
just did earlier this program, well, yeah.
Yeah, that's a general obligation bond. And voters vote on that at the state, and there's, you probably have some local school bonds up in Butte County or the Northern Valley.
Right.
Those are backed by the taxpayers. In fact, those are tax-supported bonds. And if they go south, and thankfully they rarely, if ever, do, if they go south, the taxpayers are left holding the bag. That's why you vote on it. The voters are standing in the shoes of the taxpayers. For revenue bonds, the taxpayers aren't at risk. So the voters don't need to stand in their shoes. It's the bondholders that are at risk. And so it's very misleading to say this is taxpayer protection.
Lauren Kay, let me jump in for a second. And see, that's where I'm struggling is, I mean, there's many things that we talk about, you know, on this particular program, but also, I mean, throughout our democracy, I can often disagree with people, but I understand why they're saying what they're saying. I just happen to disagree, you know, with that worldview. And that's what I can't quite figure out is, it's not that I disagree with Prop 53. I just don't understand the argument in terms of I don't understand if you pay, you deserve a say in that it doesn't seem like I'm paying anything if it's really and truly going to be paid back with user fees.
Well, here I'm a big fan of voting on taxes, and people can agree or disagree on that, but that's just my position.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a case where we're voting on this is actually can actually be dangerous because you will have cases if this passes where people who are voting on these measures have absolutely no stake in the project or in the revenues or in the bonds.
Uh-huh.
Let me give you some examples.
Okay.
This is ostensibly for projects that state projects of more than $2 billion. But if you read the language of the measure, this doesn't just apply to state projects. It applies to projects that are sponsored by what are called joint power agencies, which are organizations of local governments who come together and where the state has a role. An example of this is not far from where you are in Glenn and Colusa counties. There's some water districts have come together with the Department of Water Resources to propose a reservoir up there.
Yeah, absolutely. We've covered that one before. Go on, I'm sorry.
And the sites, right?
Right, yes, exactly.
Okay, now this reservoir would mostly serve the local area, and then they want to sell some of the water elsewhere. But it's locally developed. The ratepayers and farmers and developers up there will pay for the revenue bond, and it is mostly a local project that'll have some statewide benefit, but it's sponsored by these local agencies. Well, it's going to be expensive. There's some state money coming into it, but there's going to be substantial local revenue bonds for this, more than $2 billion, very likely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if this Prop 53 passes, everybody in the state's going to have to vote on this thing. And so you're going to have a local project where the voters of San Diego, L.A., San Francisco are going to vote to decide whether or not to develop this project up in the North Valley.
Mm-hmm.
To us, that's insane. What stake do these voters aren't, their taxes aren't going to it? If they don't get any of the water, they're not going to be paying for any of the water rates. They're not going to be liable if somehow the bonds go south. It's just insane to let voters from around the state have a say on these local projects in which they don't have a stake.
It really. I mean, you're laying it out so clearly that I don't really have any other questions, because it just sort of cuts right to the chase there. When we put it that simply, on the one hand, it sounds like $2 billion. I think we need to have a collective understanding and a collective say in what's going on. But $2 billion may only affect one particular area, and it's the user fees that keep throwing me off. I'm thinking, if I'm not paying for it, the users are paying for it. Then why, for one thing, why do I have to be educated, and why do I have to vote in something that I'm not paying for and it's not going to affect me? It's a very, I find it to be a very strange proposition.
Right, and it's more, and it's even more insidious because if you had a an ulterior motivation, you might want to undermine a project in some other part of the state because it might benefit you in where you live, and so it's. The abuse of something could be tremendous.
So, give me one last argument about why the campaign, the No on 53 campaign, objects to 53. The loss of local control, I think, is a pretty good one. It actually counters exactly what we just heard from the Yes on 53 campaign. What's your next best argument?
Well, the local control is a key argument,
right?
But another problem we have with it is that. It doesn't provide for any exemption or safety valve for emergencies. And so if there is a natural disaster or the governor declares a state of emergency, which can be for a whole wide range of unforeseen problems, if revenue bonds may have otherwise been the best approach to take in addressing this emergency, those would be off the table. And we could be subject to either having to ask the voters to vote on something to address the emergency, or use more expensive or time-consuming when time would be of the essence. So we think it's irresponsible of them to have not included an emergency provision in there.
And Lauren Kay, my very last question for you, just so that listeners can get a sense of where you're coming from. You are the president of the California Foundation for Commerce and Education. And tell us briefly, what does the California Foundation for Commerce and Education do?
Happy to do that. I'll tell you a little bit about our coalition. I run a think tank that's affiliated with the California Chamber of Commerce. And so that's the largest business advocacy organization in the state, and we co-chair the campaign opposed to Proposition 53. The other co-chair is the head of the statewide Building Trades Association, which are the labor unions that are in the construction and building industries. And so we're the business is arm in arm with labor in opposing this measure, and we're joined by Governor Brown, who's strongly opposed to this, and a number of local governments, water districts, hospitals, law enforcement. It's a very, very broad, deep coalition opposing Proposition 53.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. I have to say my vision is starting to blur with all of these propositions. We've been doing proposition after proposition for the last 6 weeks, and so this one, actually, you sort of explained it so clearly that I really appreciate that. It's less convoluted than it was when we started this conversation. So I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, and if I could also add that I hope your viewers get out and vote, and I hope your viewers send you money.
Yes, they can call us right now at 895-0131 to pledge their support for really the getting the opportunity to listen to folks like Lauren Kay to give us a clearer understanding about what all of these California ballot propositions would do if they pass. So again, Lauren Kay, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. And we are done with our propositions for tonight, but we have one more, I think, a very exciting segment of the show. But I want to give you a heads up. Next time is the last time, the last show before the November 8th ballot, the November 8th election, and we are going to cover ballot proposition 54. And I'm wondering if anybody has one in mind, you really just want to listen to some experts, give me a call, send me an email, and let me know, sue@kzfr.org, let me know which ballot proposition you're interested in learning more about, and we can whip that into shape. If you are interested in a few that we've already covered, you can go to our archives and you can listen to those. We have already done on this, for this program, we've covered ballot proposition 56, which is the $2 on cigarettes, proposition 61, which is the Drug Price Relief Act, which would equate certain drugs. It would allow the state to negotiate drug prices, but it would have to limit it to what the Veterans Administration pays for drugs. We covered Prop 63, which is background checks on ammunition, and Prop 64, which is the legalization and regulation on recreational marijuana. So you can go to our website and go to the archives and listen to those. But if you have another one that you want to learn more about, send me an email, sue@kzfr.org. I have Sterling in the house. And Sterling, give us an update on how we're doing towards that $1,000 goal.
We're pretty close to halfway there.
Oh, no, halfway there. Come on, folks, you got to call in.
Come on. 950131.
Yeah, we can do this. We can totally do this. $1,000. We have 17 minutes to raise about $500.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, a little bit more than $500.
We can do this.
But I got to tell you, I really appreciate the people that have called in because they know community radio is a great thing. And Sue is here working her heart out to get every one of these issues covered, to get both sides of the issues on the thing. And I know that you love this sort of thing. That's why you're listening. You love KZFR. You like the news, public affairs. You like the music. And you like feeling like you're part of a community. That's why you're going to join people calling 895-0131. Say that again, 895-0131. And somebody's calling right now. So there is still an open line if you want to give us a call at 895-0131. And support KZFR. Support community radio. Support news and public affairs. Support the amazing music that you hear on this radio station.
I do want to jump right in here really quickly and say that this extended edition of The Real Issue is made possible by you listeners. Give us a call, 895-0131. We have one line open. Also made possible by The Vitamin Fox, providing a large selection of traditional Chinese medicinal formulas, nutraceuticals, antioxidants and enzymes combined with acupuncture and personalized service. The Vitamin Fox supports community radio and our right to use all natural and effective medicines. Founded in 2006, The Vitamin Fox is located at 1224 Mangrove, and they're on Facebook, and they can be reached by calling 345-9685. We appreciate all of our community businesses, including The Vitamin Fox, that helps us keep the lights on and pays our amazing staff that keeps everything coordinated and pays for the equipment and the equipment repairs and things like that.
Well, why don't you light up one of our lights here? Give us a call at 895-0131.
Oh, baby, you can light up our light anytime. 895-0131. Come on, light up that light.
If you guys know me, you know that I make nesting boxes for wild birds. And if you call in with a $60 pledge right now, I will give you one of those. So give us a call at 895-0131. 895-0131.
I'm going to bring Sterling back in just a few minutes, and he's going to give us an update. I really hope that we're going to, I hope he comes back and says we have hit $1,000. We're inching our way up. We have just under 15 minutes to raise about $500. I know we can do it because I know this community is smart and appreciates really smart radio. Sterling's back there yelling, give us a call.
Give us a call at 895-0131 and join the other people who have who support community radio.
895-0131. Join the crowd. Everyone's doing it. But right now we turn to another issue completely. One issue that shows the enormous value and importance of community radio. I got a call this morning from a very dear friend and really one of my heroes who's in Missouri right now, taking some rest after participating in nonviolent civil disobedience in Iowa at the Mississippi Stand, which is directly connected to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, who's promoting the protesting the building of the Dakota Access Pipeline. So first of all, the connection to community radio is that these critically important issues are not being covered by mainstream media. Only on community radio and nonprofit media and on social media is this information getting out there. And second, Chris Moore Backman simply called me this morning, explained the importance of this issue, and tonight he's on the line with us to talk about what is happening on the ground, which all that stuff is not being covered by the mainstream media. Thanks so much for calling me this morning and for joining us tonight on The Real Issue, Chris Moore Backman.
Thanks a lot for having me, Sue. It's always great to be on the show, and it's wonderful to hear your voice.
Yeah, I can hear the tired in your voice. So so let's just jump right in, Chris. Everyone is talking about what's happening in North Dakota, especially folks that are regular listeners to Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, but we haven't really heard that much about what's happening in Keoku, Iowa. What's the connection between the Standing Rock Sioux protest and the Mississippi Stand camp in Iowa, where you were just the other day?
Yeah, okay. Well, the group that's in Mississippi Stand at that camp, it's just about 10 miles from Keokuk, Iowa, right on the banks of the Mississippi River. And this is one of many sites where the Dakota Access Pipeline is being dug in. And a group of activists in that area, took note of operations of the pipeline company that's, been heading up this whole thing, DAPL, and they started to resist in earnest maybe 6 weeks ago or so. And when they began their action, from the get-go, they, really made clear that they were standing in solidarity with the folks at Standing Rock, that this is another arm of the same movement, of the same struggle to make sure that this that this pipeline doesn't actually happen. And, the folks that are heading up to North Dakota and have been heading up there during the past months have given a great gift to our national community by shining the spotlight on this incredibly important issue, and also by modeling this incredible coming together of so many different indigenous nations, and also welcoming allies who are not indigenous to join in the struggle, and the folks that have established Mississippi Stand in Iowa, do so in solidarity with all those folks up in the north. The thing is that the group in Iowa is tiny in comparison. The camp where I was swelled last weekend to about 60 people, and of those, I would say just a dozen or so are kind of the core really serious activists who are hunkering down for, really radical, nonviolent civil disobedience. And I had the privilege of joining in with them for 4 days. I just got here to my friend's place at the Possibility Alliance. It's an intentional community here in Missouri just to take a couple days rest before I get back to the fight myself. But it's an incredibly inspiring group of young people. Most of them are in their 20s. They're deeply inspired, passionate activists who are really giving their lives over to this struggle to turn back climate change and to help us head in the direction of a truly just and sustainable future.
Well, Chris Moore Backman, well, let me just say right now, we have just a few more minutes to the end of this edition, and so we need you to call in now, 895-0131. We're getting closer and closer to our goal of $1,000. Chris Moore Backman, I can hear the tired in your voice. I know you have been working so hard over the last few months. And I did see a video that was posted on Facebook at the Mississippi Stand Facebook page, and it was just a wonderful video because it their website explains that Dakota Access is actually dumping toxic goo in areas very close to the Mississippi River, and you are there at the Mississippi Stand camp, and the other day you actually locked your body to another body in order to prevent the actual giant machines from digging. And I watched a video of you, and you just opened your heart and explained why you were there. And so if you could, just to let listeners know, you've just returned from Palestine. You spent a month there with the Christian Peacemaker teams. And so when you got to Mississippi Stand, the camera came to you, and you just opened your heart and explained what you're doing there. And so if you could explain to listeners why it's so critical that people like you go there to do nonviolent civil disobedience.
Thanks for asking, Sue. Yeah, you know, I and so many other people are waking up to the fact that this is a full-on emergency that we're in right now, that the reality of climate change is real. That was redundant, the reality being real, but climate change is real. And the consequences, we're already seeing them, are going to be, you know, unspeakably horrible for future generations. I think about my daughter in particular as I say that. And those of us who are able to act need to do so right now. And what I said when that camera came to me was, you know, I see the work that folks are doing at Mississippi Stand as the work of turning the great turning, of helping us shift from the industrial growth society that we're used to and which is not serving humankind or the planet, to shift from that to a truly just and sustainable society and future. And at this point, unless we act and act boldly, we're not going to make it. It's just that simple. And coming back from Palestine, for me, it was such a natural next step to head to where this action against the Dakota Access Pipeline is happening, because it's really the same, and we're beginning to see that. You know, when I was in Palestine, I read an article about the Palestinian group that went to Standing Rock to join in solidarity with the folks there. And the signature is the same. It's colonialism, you know. And then at the same week, I saw the incredible statement by the Movement for Black Lives and their stance of solidarity with the Palestinian people. And I was seeing all of these interconnections, and it's so exciting to me that people are beginning to realize that all these movements are connected and that it's time for us to actually build a movement of movements to turn the great turning and to recognize that our first assignment in that struggle to turn the great turning has to be to turn back climate change so that we have the wiggle room to deal with all the other issues that we face. But unless we deal with the climate change crisis and do so shoulder to shoulder across cultures, across race, across religion, all of that, until we do that, you know, we're not going to be able to build the new society that we all long to live in.
Chris Moore Backman, you are just confirmed one more time why you're one of my very top heroes. Tell us in the last minute that we have, what can listeners, what can people do to support this work?
Well, one thing is to make a contribution to KZFR, because what you said at the beginning is really important. This news is not getting out through the, you know, mainstream channels, and it's not going to. So that's number one. Number two, really ask yourself, is there something more important that I'm doing in my life right now than putting my body where it's needed in terms of this nonviolent direct action? You know, during the 60s, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee had this really intense and wonderful slogan, "Where is your body?" This is a period in history where we need to put our bodies, you know, where the struggle is, not just think about the issue in the right way, not write about it, but actually put our bodies there. So if you can get to Iowa and join Mississippi Stand, please do. If you have a friend that can make it and you can't, support that friend in getting over there. They need people. That's the main thing they need. They have the infrastructure. They have food. They have a camp set up. They have funds for bailing people out of jail. But they need the people. So please consider coming.
And that's standingrock.com for their website?
MississippiStand.com is the group in Iowa.
Right, right.
You know, Standing Rock still has over 1,000 people there, and that's great. It's wonderful. We don't want that to stop, but we need more people to show up in Iowa. And come to Keokuk. They'll pick you up and bring you to the camp, and you can get plugged into direct action.
And that is MississippiStand.com. Chris Moore Backman, thanks so much. When are you going to be back in Chico?
I don't know. My daughter Issa comes back from Palestine mid-December, so I'll be back at least by then.
Well, we miss you. We really miss you.
Yeah. Miss you too.
Yeah.
Hello to all my loved ones in Chico.
Yeah. Well, we're sending it back to you. Thanks so much for calling me and for being on the show tonight, and really deeply thanks for the work that you do.
Yeah, you too, Sue.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, boy, community radio, there is nothing like it. We are hearing the voices from the trenches fighting back against climate change, and I have Sterling in the studio to give us a quick update on where we are. How close are we to reaching $1,000?
Oh, we are about three-quarters of the way there.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, people are calling at like crazy at 895-0131. Make that 895-0131 because they are getting information here that they aren't getting anywhere else.
We need you to call in now. We are down to the wire. We have 2.5 more minutes, so call in right now, 895-0131. So what I want to do right now is quickly turn to Karen Laszlo, who is answering the phones, and she is so involved in Chico Soul. Karen Laszlo, what are you here to tell us?
I'm here to say that Chico Soul is in total solidarity with community radio, KZFR. So Kate and I are really happy to be out there answering the phones during this pledge drive. And I just wanted to say that Chico Soul, and that's S-O-L, as in sun, is a bilingual online-only news magazine, Local Issues. We specialize in local investigative reporting. We support student journalists, and also there's Chico Soul does a lot of issues on immigration, and so the motto of Chico Soul is border crossing journalism.
Ooh,
yes, and I take a lot of photos for them, and so please go to ChicoSoul.org, and you'll see all the latest issues on Chico Soul.
And that's ChicoSOL.org.
Yeah, yeah, S-O-L. And so also, you know, Chico Soul and KZFR, they're all volunteers, and we are in total solidarity with KZFR, and we ask you to please call now and help Sue reach her goal. And thank you.
Thank you so much. 895-0131.
Thank you, Karen.
Karen, thanks so much. How close are we, Sterling?
Oh, we're not as close as I hope, but let me thank a few people that did call in. Jolene called in. Shaw called in. Steve called in. Sarah called in. Phil called in. Craig called in. Sharon called in.
Holy moly.
I don't have all the names.
Holy moly.
You know
Leslie
what?
Called in.
Leslie called in. That's right. You know, last week was Prop 64, and we did not talk about the great premium of the Emerald Cup. If you know anything about marijuana, you know about the Emerald Cup. And for a pledge of $250, you can be going, get two tickets to the Emerald Cup. And if you know anything about the Emerald Cup, you know what